entertaining, cool. You are listening to LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Happy Easter, everybody. It's 11 o'clock in New York, which means it's 8 o'clock in LA. Glad you're here tonight. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Well, you know what we got for you tonight? Some hot topics, Ronan.
Hey, hey, y'all, girls and dolls. Pick a topic and we're gonna drop it on Max and Friends.
We are going to pick a topic and we're going to drop it for you tonight on Max and Friends. I am speaking a mile a minute because there is so much going on in celebrity world, people. Well, y'all know about hide your kids, hide your wife. We all need to hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your weed because Antoine Dotson got arrested yesterday. But you know what? Like all good things, something good will come out of this. And let me tell you something. Instead of arresting Antoine Dotson, y'all better find the rapist. That's what I'm talking about. Now, listen, speaking of the royal wedding, you know, what I heard, you know, I have some really close sources to Beyonce and also Jay-Z, and I heard that Beyonce and Jay-Z were performing at the royal wedding coming up. That's really all I want to talk about that. But listen, I got a good story about Oksana. Speaking of, you know, it's Passion Week, the Passion. You remember Mel Gibson wrote that? Well, Oksana, Timo Oksana, that's right. She, get ready for this, denies tampering with auto with Mel Gibson. I wonder if she was using a T-Mobile phone while she was doing that. Because, you know, I use my HTC, my G2 from T-Mobile. Hey, listen, y'all heard that Lindsay Lohan went to jail? Well, she's going to jail for 3 months, and she has about 460 hours of community service. Well, guess what? You ready for this? She really thought she was going to walk away, and get ready for this. She said that her three-month term was ridiculous and fucked up. No, what's ridiculous and fucked up, Lindsay, is that you fucked up your parole. But we still love you. Hey, Charlie Sheen. Have you seen what happened to Charlie Sheen? Well, he lost a goddess. That's right. Rachel Brie Olsen. Guess what happened? She texted him. I think she used her T-Mobile. I don't know. Who cares? But the bottom line is, guess what's really sad news, you guys? The Black Eyed Peas are retiring. That's right. You heard it here on Max and Friends in Hot Topics. Guess what? When we're back, everyone, we've got Nico Bloom. And of course, you know who's with us tonight again. The professor of political science at Hunter College, Jamie Chandler's here, and we're going to talk about can Donald Trump be president. So stay tuned. Hot Topics.
He's climbing your windows. He's snatching your people up. Trying to break them so you need to hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband because they're raping everybody out here. You don't have a call and confess. We're looking for you. We're going to find you. We're going to find you so you can run and tell that. He's climbing your windows, he's snatching your people up, trying to frame them, so y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband, cause they're raping everybody out here. You don't have to come and confess, we're looking for you, we gon' find you, we gon' find you, so you can run and tell that, run and tell that, run and tell that, homeboy, homeboy.
Y'all find that back here. No cut like a Caesar. With some new ways and a thick, clean cut, very smooth face. Seeing my sister when I walked in, he had his hands around her neck. First thing was to pull him off of her, and that's what I did.
He's climbing your windows, he's snatching your people up, trying to rape them. So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband, because they're raping everybody out here. You don't have to come and confess, we're looking for you.
Find it. wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband, cause they're bringing everybody out here. You don't have to come and confess, we're looking for you, we gon' find you.
This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci, and that was Bedroom Intruder by Antoine Dawson and the Gregory Brothers. Hey, you know what, everybody? I think Donald Trump should take that song, We Fine Climbing in Your Windows, You Better Hide Your This and Hide Your That, because I think that's what he's doing with Obama, because he's telling Obama, stop hiding your birth certificate because we're going to find it. But you know what? We got a special edition tonight of Donald Trump being the American president right here on Shout Back with Nico Bloom. Tell him what we're going to play now, Ronan. Shout Back with Nico Bloom, only on Max and Friends. Let it all out, Nico Bloom. How you doing?
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Are you ready for a new edition of Shout Back with Nico Bloom?
I'm always ready.
Well, you know, we got a good topic because tonight we are back. The professor of political science at Hunter College, Jamie Chandler, is here. So how you doing, Jamie?
Hi, Max. Hi, Nico. How are you?
Good. Oh, hi. How are you?
Doing great.
Great. Thanks.
Well, you know, everybody, there's been so much going on in the press lately about Donald Trump becoming the president of America, the United States of America, that is. Now, many have said that if Ronald Reagan, who was an actor, can become a president, and Obama, who came out of nowhere from Chicago, can become a president, why not Donald Trump? So, Jamie, what do you think about Donald Trump becoming president of the United States of America?
Well, the first thing he's going to have to do is actually declare his candidacy. So right now he's still kind of in this exploratory phase. So I have numerous thoughts, though, on if he actually were to declare. He's certainly taking on the public exposure right now with all of his rhetoric about the birth, you know, Barack Obama's birth certificate and so forth. So in terms of capturing the media, he's doing a good job in that area.
Hey, Nikki, what do you think about the birth certificate?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it only takes a second, like Donald Trump said, to show the birth certificate. And, you know, if a lot of people are not easy about it, why not just show it and please everybody? Why keep it a secret? What have you got to hide? Just say, here's my birth certificate. And I think a big thing with that is his grandmother once told the media that he was born in a Kenyan hospital, and then it went from Kenya to Hawaii. Why not just show it? It's simple document. Produce it to the media and close the subject.
Well, so, actually, he has published the birth certificate. It's on a website that Organizing for America has. It's a legal document. It was released when he requested it. It serves as prima facie evidence of his birth in Hawaii. So this is really just, you know, it's political theater that we have this continuing issue going on about documentation of someone's birth, which has been released.
Hold on real quick, Jamie. This is my question for you, Jamie. You know what? And I mean, this is just a statement that I have. I think that if Barack Obama, you know, really did have this birth certificate hidden somewhere in a vault, that Hillary Clinton's camp would have found it when she was running.
That's neither here nor there. I mean, it's not that Barack Obama – I mean, there's an original document that's handwritten, right, that is in the Hawaiian archives, and the Hawaii law states that those documents are not released to the public. And the only person that can view them is the person who the documents belong to. So there's no debate here. I mean, there's no problem here. It's he released the proper documents. Everyone from Hawaii that I know and everyone from Hawaii has been asked, they all received the same birth certificate.
There's no signature. There's absolutely no signature on that Hawaiian birth certificate, and I don't know about every
If you go to the Hawaii website for records, the birth certificate website, which I did early this week, it's been certified. It's been certified by the governor of Hawaii.
People can get paid off too.
Why can't we see I don't know. I have my original birth certificate. I know I can go get a copy with a raised seal.
Right. Well, we all have this cute little birth certificate that we got at the hospital with the gold seal on it, right? But when I went, you know, then we've got this thing that you get at the at your town records. I mean, I got one. It's just a piece of paper with a stamp on it. You know, it said that I was born in Plymouth, Massachusetts. I mean,
were you born in Plymouth, Massachusetts?
Yeah, I was. And, you know, maybe I don't think I remember my grandmother saying I was born in Kenya, but, you know, who knows with her Alzheimer's.
Well, in fairness, you know what? Do you see why this could be a debate, though, for Donald Trump and why he gets so passionate about it? Because there's so much really, you know, it's like, I mean, listen, the bottom line.
We all know he was schooled in a Muslim school. He studied in Indonesia. He studied the Quran.
But here's the deal.
But what does that have to do with his being a president or being a public servant? I mean, he's obviously extremely patriotic. He's the president. He cares about the country. He ran for office.
You have to be born on this soil.
Here's the deal. And I think this is what people are getting caught up with. Obama's already the president. Donald Trump wants to be the president. So the point is, you know, let's just go with that. And Donald Trump, you know what? Listen, he was a neighbor of mine in Connecticut. We grew up when my father died. He was an awesome man. Out of all the friends, I mean, this is a personal, you know, feeling that I have here. He called my mom and said, if there's anything you need, I'm there for you. And my mother and father had some wonderful friends that turned their back. So as a gentleman and as a neighbor, he was a cool guy. But here's the deal.
All right.
Can he be president, Jamie?
Well, let me just take a step back and just talk about this. That's a little bit the whole purpose of the birther rhetoric that Trump has been putting on is designed to appeal to a very specific constituency within the Republican Party and more particularly in the Tea Party. Mm-hmm. So this rhetoric does get those people activated, right? They in turn start coming to events and fundraisers, which helps Trump raise money to, if he decides to run, to fuel his primary bid.
He just did the Tea Party in Boca Raton, Florida. He was a speaker there. A lot of people went.
Yeah.
A lot of people went. And you know what? Right. I think, you know, this is what I heard. I have sources that say that he will announce if he's going to run on The Apprentice.
He will announce it on The Apprentice?
I mean, he's got millions and millions and millions of viewers. Oprah brought in Obama with all her viewers, so why can't Trump do it with The Apprentice?
That's his prerogative. I mean, I think that would actually be very, very strategic to do it on that show. I mean, I don't know how many viewers it has. I think it has like 9 million. He would probably do it on the season finale, which is filmed at
Lincoln
Center's Jazz Theater.
That he's going to do it then. But speaking of doing it, does he have the character, Jamie?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of questions about his statements, right? The statements that he's made about his past, his beliefs, his financial situation. So if we were, you know, there's certainly a character question there, right? There's also questions about the statements he's made that tend to be hyperbolic or stretched out. So there is character there. But, you know, this stuff would all come out in a campaign, and it would really be up to the voters to determine whether or not these questions about Trump are sufficient enough for him to not win primary races.
Nikki, would you join his campaign?
Well, yeah. I mean, a big thing that I like is – he said, and I hope he does run, and I hope this is, you know, going to be, you know, happen in actuality. He said he's willing to spend $600 million of his own money, which I think is important if that's the case, because then there's no influence from the media as far as, you know, one way or the other. It's his own money. It's not any celebrity funding it. It's not money coming from another country donations. So I think that's important. You can have a political candidate that's going to fund his own candidacy.
What do you think, Jamie?
Well, you know, that's a very populist. I mean, a lot of people have been going into this, like, self-funding mode, right? So Trump is saying he's going to take his own money, but it really isn't. I mean, yes, he's funding part of his campaign with his own money, but there are hundreds of satellite organizations, like, you know, we think about Karl Rove's organization coming for American Crossroads, these Tea Party organizations that have had Trump at their speaking. Those places are all raising money, and they in turn are going to be airing ads on behalf of Trump indirectly. They're not part of his campaign. So there is no way that you can say that by using your own money, you're going to extricate yourself from the world of special interests and favors.
But he could afford it. I agree entirely that, of course, there's going to be other donations, absolutely. But the fact that he is capable of affording to fund his own candidacy, you know, I mean, I think that says a lot. I think, you know, he's a very multidimensional businessman. And I like, a big thing that I like is, you know, all the people that run are always politicians, whether they're Republicans or Democrats. I think that he's, you know, a brilliant businessman. If he could come back from bankruptcy more than once and, you know, build such an empire, I really think, you know, the government is a big business that needs a businessman. And I like that he's very pro-USA, and he speaks up about that. That, you know, let's clean up the education here. Let's, you know, fix the roads, which bridges.
Listen, you know what? I want to say something, Nikki. Hold on. Let me say something.
Those are things that Barack Obama campaigned on. I mean, one of the concerns I have about Trump is his recent commentary about the way he referred to African Americans in the press when he was being interviewed. I mean, he came up with this monolithic statement of call the blacks. The blacks have no problem with me. I mean, it's kind of an offensive way.
He's offensive. He's narcissistic. But that's what this country needs. We need someone to be offensive and narcissistic. But hold on. Let me tell you something about education. And this is just from perspective. He's got three children who are very smart. He's got more than three, but Donald, Eric, and Ivanka, those are three smart children. You've never seen any of their children in any kind of scandals like Paris Hilton or Kim Kardashian. So just the way he raises children is a testament to a father that he is, and this nation needs a father at this time.
Okay.
Nikki?
It says a lot about, you know, it says a lot about him, because in families today, they raise three children where there's not one out of the three that went astray. I mean, they're all highly educated. They all are, you know, very intellectual. They all have nice family life. They're, you know, they're good examples to lead by. I just want to add something in about Trump making the comment about the blacks. I mean, Barack, he sat in, you know, maybe a lot of people don't know that, he sat for over 20 years in church in Chicago with Reverend Jeremiah Rice, bashing the United States, saying that the government gave the black people AIDS. And he sat in his congregation. He was his mentor throughout life. And then he comes out and says, I sat there for 20 years, but I never heard any of that in his sermon. I mean, there's, you know, there's all kinds of prejudices. And, I mean, we saw it with Barack Obama. And, you know, they all just say something wrong at some point. Nobody's 100% perfect along the way, but you know, to pick just on that one thing, to find things to pick on. Now they're trying to say he wasn't present at all the voting in New York, and he says that he could, you know, documents prove different. You know, there's a lot of he said, she said.
All
well,
right, well, you know
that,
what?
I mean that is actually I think that is a good issue to bring up, is that if you are inclined or want to get involved in politics, you should have, you know, demonstrate some political participation in the past. And if he hasn't been voting in 21 primaries in the past, since, you know, historically, however that goes back, you know, it does kind of weaken his claim that he's interested in being, you know, going through this whole campaign. Now, if I were going to sit back and go ahead.
It didn't weaken Barack Obama's campaign when he was senator and he wasn't present at and probably 9 out of 10, I'm not sure the number of it. He was never present at the voting and at any of the senatorial meetings, and that didn't hurt him. So kind of, you know, that's kind of on the same note as far as if that is true, where he didn't vote in New York's elections, and supposedly in 2002, he didn't vote in the general election. But, you know, Barack was never present at his senatorial meetings either, and he's now president of the United States.
Well, I don't know what the facts are with that, so I couldn't respond to it. But I just, from my standpoint, I mean, we should have some solid criteria that we use as voters to choose a president. And I think in the past, the types of things that we focus on are not the best ones to focus on if we're trying to find a really good leader. And we've talked about his family life. Okay, well, that's really great, but is that really something essential to being a president? Or do we want someone who is going to, through their public behavior, bring us up, lift us up to a higher level of being better, right? Or do we want a politician who's going to get caught up in all the nasty little rhetoric and the tricks and all these little tactics that you use as a campaigner to activate people? You know, it's like, it's just the question, and it's like, it's more of the same as far as I'm concerned. Go ahead.
Now,
sorry, Nikki.
No, listen, you guys, Jamie, do you think there's anything going for Trump in his favor to run for president?
Well, I think, you know, I'm looking at it from the standpoint of him as a potential candidate and as a successful campaigner. And I think there are a lot of things going well for him. And I think that he's going to be able to get a significant amount of support. The question of actually winning, well, who he needs to appeal to in the primaries is the very diehard Republican conservatives, right? These are the people who go to the Tea Party rally. So he probably will have them locked up pretty well if he were to run. There are other candidates out there that are certainly more ambitious, as ambitious. The question is, when you get to the general election and you have all these on-the-fence independent voters, whether or not he can actually get them, you know, and that would really determine if he were to win. My prediction is that Obama's going to get a second term. But, you know, Trump's very good. He knows marketing. He knows the right things to say in terms of phrasing them and saying them briefly. And he's very forceful, too. So he says the same thing over and over again, which is a sales technique. And that probably goes back to why Robert De Niro called him a used car salesman the other day.
Oh, yes, Robert De Niro did go after him wildly. But so did Barbara Walters. I mean, everyone who knows Trump knows that he's not ashamed and he's not scared and he's got a set of balls to go after anyone. And he did it in his interview. You know, he said, next question. Who says that?
The one with Candy Crowley and George Stephanopoulos.
Yeah, next question. You know, he was very confident, very narcissistic. But, you know, listen, that's what this country might need. What's against Trump, Jamie?
Well, I think there's a couple things. First of all is, you know, there's going to be some questions around his marriages and his past and some of his claims that he's made. He's already getting, you know, the press is already starting to come around and dig things up. So, you know, whether or not those are things that are credible things to go after, just touching on what Nikki said earlier, you know, you got to think about the voters, right? And the voters are so fickle that they will go out and turn against somebody from the briefest amount of negativity. Another problem for him is, I think, going to be just his general rhetoric. You know, the more he talks about the Bertha thing, the more he turns off established Republicans. And those established Republicans do have a big say in the outcome of primaries. You know, they're the ones that were determining where all the money's going to go and who's going to get involved and so forth. So it's not going to be like a said and done easy thing for him. I mean, one other thing I think that is going to be – I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, tell me.
Say it quickly. I don't mean to talk over Nikki.
No. Please tell me. We have time.
He's also – he's never been through a political campaign. And regardless of how many people you hire who are experts and everything, they're a very difficult animal that have millions of moving parts. And they require you to partner with – a lot of outside organizations, right, to make things happen. And I think that would be a real learning curve for him in the campaign because he's never done that before.
Speaking of going outside of political realm, you know, there's the charity world. And recently Seinfeld pulled out because of Trump's ranting and raving about Obama's and about Trump's views on Obama's birth certificate. Nikki, what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, that was quite a disturbing event. Jerry Seinfeld was supposed to speak at Donald Trump's son's it was a birthday party and benefit for St. Jude Children's Hospital. And right at the last minute, he pulled out and was ranting about he doesn't like how Donald Trump is kind of harassed, you know, it's a harassment issue, enough about the birth certificate. And it's kind of like, you know, you knew that going into when you committed to, you know, the charity for a children's hospital. And then, you know, at last minute, kind of, you know, it's a real slap in the face, not just to Donald Trump, but to the, you know, to the children's hospital. I mean,
well, listen, the bottom line is this. Whatever Trump is doing is getting his name out there. Listen, on Facebook, he has 300,000 fans. Obama has 19 million fans. But also there's a webpage on Facebook that says, what has Obama done so far? They have over 800,000 followers. So there's just a bunch of numbers, people. But speaking of numbers, that's how you win presidency of the United States. So, Jamie, if so, Trump is supposed to run, and if he's going to run, what should his campaign slogan be?
God, I haven't even thought about it. I mean, I think it's going to have to be like, you know, revitalizing America's economy or something like that. I mean, and most of, you know, that's really one of the things I think he does have a talent at, is talking about the economy and some of these complex topics like Chinese currency manipulation and so forth. And he very much simplifies that, and people can quickly understand it. If he could shift off this birther topic and onto that stuff, you know, he would, you know, I think he would be get a lot of fuel for a potential campaign.
Nikki, what should his slogan be? Nikki, what should his slogan be?
Well, it should be "You're fired," and that should be directed towards Obama.
That's true. That's a good one, too.
Well, and Obama should be "The chickens are coming home to roost."
Yeah, he actually didn't want to say it at that Tea Party thing, the Tea Party event he was at. He was trying not to say it, but then he said it.
You're fired. He should get $1 million for every time he says "you're fired," or he should give $1 million. But anyway, you guys, it's going to be an interesting next couple of months, and it's going to be an interesting whole thing, what's going on. But real quick before we go, Jamie, what do you think about this premature campaigning that Obama's doing?
Well, it's not really premature. I mean, he's been campaigning since he got into office. You know, it's like one of the benefits of being president and running for office is that you have the trappings of the office to going for you. You know, I mean, when Bush was prior to the primaries in 2004, when Bush, you know, Bush's campaign, he went to Daytona 500 and flew the Air Force One over the raceway. And then he did the checkered flag. And then there was this huge activity in the parking lot. Republicans are like getting people registered and selling all kinds of memorabilia. So it's not unusual.
Nikki, what do you think about it?
I just want to go back to the thing and put out there to all the listeners is that, you know, we've had politicians running this country, and it's not running. I mean, it's a deficit. Just there's a lot of wrong going on. And I'd like to see someone in there that focuses and concentrates on this country that's losing itself. We're losing ourselves. I mean, back to even China. Everything's made in China. We owe so much money. We're indebted to China. And it's just focus on what's happening in the United States of America before you're going to worry about this country and that country and fixing and cleaning up and all the other things that we're doing for other countries. I think we need someone that's going to clean up our country. And I just want to emphasize to the listeners, someone like Donald Trump, he employs thousands and thousands. I don't know the number, but his industry is so tremendous, his empire. He employs thousands of people, and in fact, thousands of people all over the world depend on the income coming from his business. So he knows how to run a business, and I just think, you know, the government needs a business person to run it. It's a business. The government is a business, and it has the wrong people, and we all see what happens to corporations, the car industry. When things are run by the wrong people and government gets so involved, it's just that, you know, it all goes wrong. So I want whoever's going to be in there to focus on cleaning up America first.
All right.
I got to kind of respond to that.
Absolutely.
I agree with Nikki in that, you know, the presidency and politics shouldn't just be the career, upward career choice of lawyers and, you know, business people. There are not a lot of ex-business people in politics. I mean, there are some, but not to the degree that there are lawyers and former politicians. So, I mean, I do think that the presidency should be opened up to a broader selection of the public. And the larger issue, just touching on what Nikki says, that our political system has termites. I mean, it's a lot of problems going on. It's not necessary. It's not just Barack Obama. It's the political system and the inability for people to compromise and the inability for politicians to look at the big picture and only focus on little things, which they know are going to excite their base. And it's also the sickness of politics in that there is too many special interests involved. So that's where things have to change. And ultimately, it's us, the citizens, that are going to have to push that change. It's not going to be the politicians, because they're, why change when you've already got a good deal?
There you go. Hey, Nikki and Jamie, by the way, Donald Trump employs nearly 22,000 people in his companies.
That's a lot of people.
On that note, you guys, thank you so much for being here tonight. Jamie and Nikki, have a great night. Great conversation about Shoutback. And listen, we're going to talk about this more, so I look forward to having you both on again.
Great. Thank you. Have a good one, Nikki.
Take care.
Guys.
Have a good night.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Thank you. Well, we're going from, can Donald Trump be president in the United States, to what really was going on with Jesus? And is there more to the story that we don't know about? Did he go to France? Well, Joseph Lumpkin is coming on tonight. Y'all know him from Fifth Estate Publishing. Check out fifthestatepublic.com. And we're going to talk about that. You know what it is? It's ancient knowledge for a modern world. But I got to say hi to Nancy out there. And I got to tell you all what's going on in the weather. Well, guess what? L.A., you're 75 degrees with a low of 55 tomorrow and partly sunny. New York, you're 67 with low of 55 and rain. But Florida, you're 86 and sunny with a low of 75. So go to Delta.com because flights are on sale. Hey, thanks, Nicole Bloom and Jamie Chandler, professor of political science at Hunter College. Well, on that note, y'all, I want to talk to you about a song that we all love here. And that's called Lead Me to the Water by our friend Sharon Agati. And I'm going to play it for you tonight here on Max and Friends. Happy Easter. Lead Me to the Water by Sharon Agati. Joseph Lumpkin up next.
Yesterday I heard somebody say the word.
This is Max and Friends, and I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back. Hey, everyone. We're going to get a little spiritual, like Sharon Agassiz says, because that was Sharon Agassiz, lead me to the water. We're going to take you closer to that man and tell you why he understands. But now, there's a conflict in my soul, because today, everyone, happy Easter, by the way, I was at church, and I got home, and I got into the Bible, and I was like, you know what? Let's find out how many times Jesus was showing up after resurrection, after he got off the cross into the tomb and came out and he was risen again. He showed up 11 times. And I had this theory, like, you know, a good Jewish boy should go see his mother. You know, if he were resurrected, why wouldn't he go see his mother the first time? And then I was like, you know what? This all started brewing in my mind because Joseph Lumpkin sent me an email because we were talking about this. And there's some other theories about Jesus's resurrection that I thought y'all would like to hear about. So he's back. From Fifth Estate Publishing, check out Fifth Estate Pub. That's F-I-F-T-H, estatepub.com. He's back, Joseph Lumpkin. Welcome back to Max and Friends.
Thanks, Max. Good to be here. And how are you today?
I'm doing very well. Happy Easter to you.
Thank you. Happy Easter, or if we were 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago, happy Ishtar, or happy Oyster.
It's all good to me. Speaking of, all different ways to say it. Now, the point is that, is it really what we're saying, the correct thing? Happy Easter. And did Jesus really resurrect? What's going on, Joseph? Because there's some theories that maybe there's another story.
There are a lot of theories, Max. And yes, there are other stories out there. Other stories told within other gospels, even. So before we begin, let me throw out a couple of caveats here. We're not after changing anyone's faith. We're not after destroying anyone's faith. We are here to present the historical evidence from other theories. That's all. So your cards and letters and emails are welcome, but keep the hate mail to a minimum. Okay, so here we go.
Send it to me at max@maxsushi.com. There you go.
All right. Let me set the stage just really quickly to make this make sense. And I'm going to pick let's take a cult here that we've known. Let's pick David Koresh. Not that Jesus and David Koresh have anything at all in common personally, but the government viewed them the same. So let's set that stage, and let's look at this thing from a governmental and historical standpoint, where someone like David Koresh comes up to you and says, "I am the Lord. I am God incarnate. I'm going to die here pretty soon, and in 3 days, I'm going to rise again." Okay? So the government and most people around would look at that and go, "That guy's crazy. Send him his meds." And that's really what was happening at the time. So Jesus has died. And the very first thing that goes through these guys' minds in the government, Pilate and them, they say, "Wait a minute. And this guy says he's going to come up from the grave in 3 days. So let's make sure that his disciples don't come and steal him away. So let's put a couple of guards there." So they post a guard, two guards actually, in front of the tomb. Now, the stories I'm about to tell you all center around that part of it being a problem. So the guards were either bought off or drugged or distracted. And, of course, usually if a guard does not do his duty, something happens, he's executed. So these guys have a reason to stay alive. So that sets the story historically. And if you can believe that someone in the same kind of cult following at that time, because that's how Christianity was looked upon, as David Koresh or other, you know, pick a cult leader, then you have an idea as to what the government was looking at. So now, based on that, let's look at some theories.
And there's a lot of theories.
There's about a half a dozen that actually, some of them make sense, some of them don't, but they're out there. Let's start with the most amazing theory, the most bizarre theory. Let's start from a theory in the Gospel of Barnabas. It literally says Jesus did not die. Judas died in his place. Now, I'm going to put two things together here very quickly, because I know we don't have a lot of time. In the Gospel of Judas, we are told that Judas was actually chosen by Jesus to to actually act out this plan he had to bring all the pieces together that would allow him to be crucified, and the plan, God's plan, would take place. So Judas, in the Gospel of Judas, becomes the hero. In the Gospel of Barnabas, however, it says that Judas really was the betrayer. And what God did was, in the middle of this whole thing, he changed Judas's appearance to look like Jesus. And in the Gospel of Barnabas, it says that Judas came in impetuously into this group where the centurions were looking for Jesus. They looked at him. They said, "That's Jesus. Take him." And against the protest of Judas, according to this Gospel of Barnabas, he was taken and crucified instead. So the appearance of Jesus, yeah, isn't that something?
I tell you.
Now, I've got to add this also. In the Quran, generally speaking, it mimics that story. Now, we believe that the Gospel of Barnabas is probably a forgery coming out of about the 1500s, but it's hard to prove because what you're dealing with is copies of copies of copies. So very hard to deal with, to settle on that. But in the Gospel of Barnabas, that's what it says. In the Quran, that's what they point to also. Oh, there's a theory for you to chew on.
That's a deep theory. And, I'm sure that a lot of people haven't heard about that theory. What's interesting, Joseph, is a lot of people haven't heard about these theories. I think we have blinders on in a lot of churches, and we just focus on one thing. Not that they're saying they're wrong by any means, but just to hear other perspectives or other people's point of views on what could have happened is fascinating.
Absolutely. I'll give you a couple of more that make more sense. There is a stolen body theory that says basically that the disciples came in and really did do what Caesar was afraid would do. They distracted the guards. They went in. They took the body. Now, backing this up is a very odd little thing that occurred right after the crucifixion and resurrection. Caesar, at that particular time, enacted a law, put a law in place, said that anyone disturbing a body or taking it from a tomb without his permission would be immediately put to death. Now, that to me looks like a political knee-jerk reaction to the fact that the state of Rome at that time actually did believe that the body was taken. How about that?
And where did they take the body?
Well, nobody knows. Nobody knows. Now, it has... this thing has two prongs, if you will. One's called the missing body, one's called the stolen body, because the stolen body says that people outside of both groups, that is, they weren't Christian and they weren't of the state. Someone, a third party, stole the body, maybe to kind of create anarchy at the time, because there were a lot of different groups around trying to figure out a way to destabilize Rome.
Wow.
Now, that's the stolen body theory. The missing body theory simply says that the disciples took the body and created the story.
Well, there's also another story that Jesus might have gone with Mary Magdalene to France, of all places. That's the story that I want to hear, Joseph.
Well, let me start out by kind of quoting a couple of scriptures to you, because we have to set up the fact that they were involved, right? I mean, that's
absolutely
the first thing that you have to do.
Right.
Okay, so I'm going to quote, the Gospel of Philip. And by the way, this is where the Da Vinci Code got most of its fodder, you might say. And we have this, if you want to look at it, under the Gnostic Gospels, a book called The Gnostic Gospels of Philip, Mary Magdalene, and Thomas. So out of the book of Philip, it says, there were three women named Mary, and Mary, by the way, means bitter, who walked with the Lord, and they were his mother, his sister, and Mary of Magdala, who was his consort and companion. Thus his mother, his sister, and his companion were all named Mary. And it goes on to say that he loved Mary. He loved Mary more than all the other disciples, and he kissed her often on her. And right there, the text is missing. There's a hole in the codex. And we assume it's mouth, but we're not sure. And the others saw his love for Mary. Sir?
No, I was going to say it's a good conspiracy. Why all of a sudden is it missing and why did it stop?
We don't know. It just occurs that it looks like there was a piece missing or torn from the manuscript at that particular point. Mm-hmm. So we have no idea what it actually said. We assume he kissed her off and on the mouth, but it could have been
right.
Her forehead.
Now,
but then they go back and they say, wow, why are you?
They're saying that this was that Mary was Jesus' companion. So are we hinting that wife, partner, girlfriend, like what's the – where does the extreme go? That this was his wife?
The extreme of that theory is that they were wed. The other theory on the other side is that they were best friends and companion. But in that particular place and time, you didn't go around kissing your companion on the mouth if it was a woman because you had strict rules as far as conduct goes. So, you know, we're assuming that they were, let's just say, very, very close.
And now there's rumor they had children.
There is that rumor. And it goes back to the Holy Grail, which if you look at the French word, grail and rail, the difference is the cup and the blood. And if you parse the letters differently, you have holy blood instead of grail. And so, you know, and this goes into the Holy Blood, Holy Grail book that was written, which I don't know if you know that those guys actually sued Dan Brown for stealing their idea because they did so much great research on this. So the book of Philip goes on to say, they asked Jesus a question, why do you love her more than us? And he replied, why don't I love her the same way I love you? Well, I mean, what does that mean? That's like, he says, I love her in a totally different way. Well, of course. Now,
wow, this is just getting fascinating.
So Dan Brown, the authors of Holy Blood, Holy Grail, ran across this gospel, the lost gospel of Philip, and another gospel, the gospel of Mary Magdalene. And in that gospel, Mary is actually talking to the disciples, and she says, he gave me more information than he gave y'all. We were closer. We spoke of the deeper things, of the things that he didn't tell you. And they got into this great big argument, this huge discussion. Why would Jesus tell a woman more than he would tell his male friends? And it was just, you know, decided among them, look, Jesus knows what he's doing. It's obvious he loved this woman. He gave her this information, and we've got to kind of go with it. Now, these are Gnostic gospels. These are gospels that portray Christianity in a slightly different light. My theory is that the church did not want these things known because in the Gnostic gospels, after you get past the different cosmology and you just get down into the nitty-gritty of what the religion itself believed, they believed in a personal transference of knowledge from God to the seeker that freed that seeker from the necessity of going through any other person, priest, pope, whatever the case may be. Obviously the church did not want that. They were a power structure seeking to coalesce their power and control the people. And anything that freed the people from the church would have been suppressed. So you don't want Gnosticism running rampant through Christianity.
or theory of marriage of Jesus that he ran to France and had some children either.
That's correct. So the problem here is two-pronged if we're going to get down to spirituality. The resurrection of Jesus really is the cornerstone of most the way that the Christians view their faith. You know, Paul goes on to say, if Jesus was not resurrected, then we have really no hope. Because we look to be resurrected and be with him in heaven. But in the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus says, if you look up to heaven The birds are already there. They're ahead of you. And if you look down to heaven, the fish have resided there all along. Heaven is within you. You seek it there, and there you find the truth. So these Gnostic Gospels have a totally different slant on what Christianity was. Uh-huh. And around 140, 150 AD, when the church was beginning to come together as a power structure, Valentinus vied for the papacy, and he was a Gnostic. And what little records we have of that particular time showed that within two or three votes, Valentinus would have been pope, and our entire religion would have been different, because he would have spread this Gnostic gospel throughout the world. We would have been talking an entirely different thing here. You would have been calling me up and saying, tell me about how to look inside to find God.
Mm. Now, that's a whole nother show.
I believe that that really is the question we should be asking today. What does this mean? Mm-hmm. And to me, Easter comes down to this. Jesus taught us how to live and how to die. No matter what gospel you talk about, no matter what you read, you come down to one thing. If you give everything you have to those that you love, and you love others as you love yourself, and you love God with all your heart, you will have resurrection. You will have eternal life. You will live forever in the hearts and minds of others, whether you believe in heaven or not. It doesn't make any difference. You do love, and love begets life.
Amen. Well, you know what I have to say about today, and there's a great writer, Clarence W. Hall, and he says, and I think this is a brilliant quote for the afternoon and for tonight's show and to wrap up, is that if Easter says anything to us today, it says this: you can put truth in a grave, but it won't stay there. You can nail it to a cross, wrap it in winding sheets, and shut it up in a tomb, but it will rise. So that's the truth, and I always say that truth crushed to the ground shall rise again. So tonight, everyone, we thank you for tuning in. If any of this portion of this segment of the show has brought a new truth to you about who Jesus is, then we welcome your comments. You can send them to max@maxtucci.com. I thank you, Joseph Lumpkin, for being here again today. FifthEstatePub.com is where you can go get his books. You have, like, what, over 52 books there now, don't you?
There's actually over 100 books, about half of them written by myself. But we've got several, many of them are now used in theological seminaries. Luther University in Iowa just picked up one of our encyclopedias of lost gospels and lost scriptures to use in their theological seminary. So we appreciate that.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you all visiting FifthEstatePub.com. Get the books because they're really good. You know, we've talked about so many of them on the show, and we look forward to talking to them a lot more. I want to have you back on again, Joseph. We have a good conversation all the time. So thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you, Max. I appreciate it, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Likewise. Have a great night.
Bye-bye.
That was Joseph Lumpkin, everyone. That's right, FifthEstatePub.com. I hope we enlightened you tonight on Max and Friends. We went from Antoine Dotson to Donald Trump. Can he be president? To Jesus. That's how we roll here on Max and Friends and LA Talk Radio. Tune in every Sunday. If you missed any portion of the show, go to www.latalkradio.com. Look in the archives for Max Tucci. P.S., we have a free app, so go get it, for iPhones and Androids. And also, everyone, I got to wrap this show up, but hi to Lena. And remember, everyone, this week, to take life to the max, and truth crush the ground shall rise again. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Until next time, be well. Good night.